Hey guys, Don Ricci here, episode 54, part two of my interview. Aaron and I got in a good groove in the second half of this one, so I ain't going to give any spoilers, just listen and enjoy. Also, too, make sure to go on iTunes, hit us up with a 5-star and a review. It helps us spread the word and grow the show. And make sure to follow us on Instagram at Delta_weightlifting. And with that, let's get into it. And we pick up right where we left off, episode 54. Here we go.
You have an article that you wrote is titled, "So You Want to Be a Coach." And in looking through it, the thing that always interests me the most are the darker, more difficult part of being a coach.
And being not real, so much, the real parts.
The real parts, exactly. The hard truths.
Yeah.
And you state in that article things like the sacrifices that need to be made, practical day-to-day sacrifices, the emotional up and down of it, the disappointments, the just overall the emotional pain of it,
sure,
that you kind of emphasize as being the kind of really the most difficult part about it. But when I was looking through it, I was kind of asking myself, do those things apply to coaching in general? Or is that coming more from a place from a coach who is also a gym owner and trying to run a business?
So for those that haven't read that, kind of give a little bit of context to that. So I wrote a 2-part series on the blog. If you're listening, check it out on deltaweightlifting.com. But so part one was really to give readers, potential coaches, the good, the bad, and the ugly. So you know, give them an idea of the good aspects of coaching, but also to give them the bad and the ugly. Because there's a lot of it. And to me, the bad, it comes down to the sacrifices that you make as a coach. And it doesn't matter if you're a gym owner or just a strictly coach in weightlifting, in football, whatever sport. My opinion, it transcends sports. And it transcends what type of setting you're in, whether institutional, private, you're just a coach or entrepreneurial coach, kind of all those things. And to me, those, the sacrifices come down to, first off, time, financial,
yeah,
and lastly, and to me, the most difficult is the emotional. So, you know, it doesn't matter. Again, this is why it transcends coach, gym owner, weightlifting coach, strength coach, football coach, what have you. Coaching takes time. You know, it's a time suck. You know, you're going to be, especially when you're starting out, and this may be for a coach's entire career, you're in early, you're out late, you miss birthdays, you miss potential anniversaries, you have to sacrifice family time to put with your athletes and or your team. So that's a big sacrifice that I wanted to let a lot of people just aware of, that it's, a lot of people get attracted to being a personal trainer or, at least in the private sector, oh, I can make my own hours.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, you can, but you're not going to be that successful.
Sure.
It's a sacrifice, a financial sacrifice. Again, transcends all sports, all sectors of coaching, whether just a pure coach or an entrepreneurial coach, a gym owner. The reality of it, you're not going to be making a lot of money right away. You know, if you're in, you start as a, if you're whether you're a sport coach or a strength conditioning coach at an institutional level, you know, you're going to be a GA, you're going to be a volunteer assistant, intern, and then you get a master's, and then your first job, you're making like 35 to 45 grand.
Right.
So that's a big financial sacrifice. If you're a gym owner,
right,
you know, you may not make jack diddly squat for the first 3 to 5 years. I mean, that's just business.
Yeah.
You know, it takes 3 to 5 years to kind of get things rolling from a financial standpoint.
Are there things that are more difficult in being a gym owner, specifically being a gym owner that doesn't exist if you're in the
private? Yeah, it's not more difficult, but it's just different.
It's different.
You know, I don't necessarily have to talk to other. I don't have to go to battle with sport coaches or even coaches within my staff,
right?
Because I'm the head cheese. You know, I'm the sport coach as the weightlifting coach. So that's a trade-off. But I have more to worry about. I don't have to worry about being a coach. I have to worry about sales. I have to worry about marketing. I have to worry about, accounting, this, that, you know, keeping the lights on. So there's more, you know, as a entrepreneurial coach or a gym owner and coach in the private sector, you know, there's more to worry about. And it doesn't make it better or worse. It's just different.
Mm-hmm. And why did you decide to go this route in your life?
Simple, because I was older. I got into this career later.
Okay.
You know, I got into this originally because I wanted to be a strength coach. But I started this journey. This is essentially a second career for me. I was in real estate in the corporate world before this. And I got into this when I was 27. So, you know, and I didn't have a formal education in this. You know, most guys at my age at that point already had their masters and already did their GAs and or were starting to do their GAs and were getting their first jobs, whereas I was just starting that. And I was newly married.
Mm-hmm.
And also having our first kid. You know, by the time I got into that institutional setting. So, you know, it was just it was just timing. You know, it's simple math of I have a family now and I'm not able and or willing to travel, bounce around different parts of to these directional schools to chase my career. So I looked at going private as a way to coach, but also hold to one of my other values is just being a family man. And you know, if I got into this world, the strength training, weightlifting, 5 years prior, maybe a different story. Right. I may not be a weightlifting coach. I may still be a strength coach, but things happen for a reason. So that's why, or that's a major reason why.
Do you identify as a gym owner? Have you like being a gym owner, or is it a means to an end?
I got into the gym business so I could coach.
Okay.
When I talk to people that don't know what I do, I tell them I'm a gym owner. Because if I say I'm a weightlifting coach, it's like I'm speaking fucking Chinese, Mandarin Chinese to them.
Sure.
So it's easier to say I'm a gym owner. But I, when I'm talking to people that know, I'm a coach.
Okay.
I got into, I opened up Delta Weightlifting because I wanted to coach. Simple as that.
Right.
You know, I didn't want to open up Delta Weightlifting just to own a gym. Gyms are a gym business is a fucking grind.
Right.
Yeah, it's not a very, it's not a world of glitz and glam. So it was a means to an end for me to be able to coach and to be able to not just coach, but to coach athletes.
So if I came to you tomorrow and said, Don, or sometime in the future, I want to start my own gym. Can we have a conversation about it?
Yeah.
And then what would you then tell me? What are the things that you would want me to know?
Don't do it. No. just like with a lot of the stuff I always talk about. Why? Mm-hmm. What's your why?
The purpose.
What's your purpose? Why do you want to open up a gym? First off, can you pursue, is it to coach? Well, can you do that without taking the risk of opening up a gym? So, to me, it always comes down to what's your purpose? What's your why?
You know, here in some of the blogs that you posted specifically on purpose, you wrote, for the person to ask themselves, who are you and what are you about?
Mm-hmm.
And then consistently evaluating and reevaluating.
Yep.
Can you talk a little more specifically about that?
So
how a person their self-understanding.
So simply, who are you? What are you about? Now, this is something I'm really big with my athletes on is trying to get that message across and trying to get that conversation going. Because if you don't know who you are and you can't articulate who you are, then you're leaving that up to anyone else to define who you are.
Right.
So you have to define you as a person. First and foremost. Now, what does that mean? Who am I? Don Ricci. Well, duh.
Yeah.
But more than that. What do you stand for? What are your values? You know, that's what I mean with who are you? Because if you don't know what you stand for and you don't know what your values are, life is going to be a big kick in the nuts because you're going to be going around, pacing around with your thumb up your ass, walking into walls, not knowing where the fuck to go.
Yeah. And being very indecisive.
Right.
On the things that you spontaneously decide that you want to do.
Yes. Because if you know who you are and what you're about and you know what you stand for, it gives you a much clearer path to where you want to go. Again, it helps create and drive that purpose, that why.
And the process of evaluating and reevaluating.
That's important because that shit may change. A number of our athletes came to that realization, reevaluated things and realized what they were doing wasn't what they really wanted to do. And so, you know, we've had some attrition. So while that's unfortunate, you know, I've talked about this before, talked about this earlier, was, why I got into this, you know, my purpose, what drives me is helping people. Being able to either change, create a change, the triangle, delta, right? Create, enact a change in someone's life, a positive change, and help change the direction or the outlook of someone's life. So, well, you know, last year we had some attrition. I'd like to at least think that some of that came, why some of the, we had people leave, athletes leave, is because through our conversations and reflection and self-evaluation, they realized, you know what, I'm not doing this for the right reasons, mm-hmm. and maybe it's time for me to go. Maybe it's time for me to pursue those things that I actually do love and am passionate about. So at the end of the day, I take a step back, and as frustrating and as a as it is for me as a coach, as a person, it still allows me to sleep at night. At least that's what I tell myself, thinking that through those conversations of evaluation and self-reflection, that I at least help shift their outlook on really what's important in their life, even if that did shoot myself in the foot.
Right, right. Well, the reevaluation can be a double-edged sword for a person who is not too aware of who they are, because then they could, impulsively.
Oh, for sure.
You know, decide something has changed, and then they kind of overreact.
Yep. Some people are wishy-washy, and even through self-reflection, they, you know, it's like they come up with something new every fucking day.
Right.
So the people that are just, and part of that is because they're, you know, even through reflection, they're not that self-aware. And to me, that's a, it's an issue of, again, not really understanding who they are.
Yeah.
You know, someone really is wishy-washy. It tells me they don't really understand themselves.
You think it's more increasingly more difficult in this time?
As in like kind of postmodern, in quote unquote today's
world? Yeah, in today's world, as opposed to before your life was kind of decided for you. Or there was a lineage. You did what your father did, what your grandfather did, and so forth.
I think there's a... You're getting fucking deep. I think it's... There's less... there's more... In my observation, there's more... There's less pressure to do what other people tell you you need to do. And personally... I don't like that mm-hmm. either. I'm a free will, self-determination kind of guy. You know, don't right. tell me what to fucking do. And you can give me suggestions
sure.
and guide me, but I'm going to make my decisions. That's kind of one of my values and my kind of worldviews. Yeah, that's one thing with like the millennials and that I kind of appreciate. There's less pressure to be a doctor or an attorney or whatever mm-hmm. that high, you know, that finance guy, because that's what I was growing up. That's what I was told that I needed to do when I was growing up. I think there's less of that, which can be a good thing
yeah.
overall. The only bad thing with that is that for some people who aren't solid in themselves, who aren't self-aware, it creates a sense of loss, being lost.
Yeah, misguided. Definitely.
Right, right. So with that, I think there's always a happy medium. Always, there should always be a balance with that. I don't think I'm seeing more, like, I don't think it's a bad thing or a good thing. I just think it is what it is. Those, individuals, that are very self-aware, to me, the commonality is they're great parents.
Yeah.
Not helicopter parents, not overly involved parents, but good parents that taught them what they needed to do. Raised them well, but also gave them the autonomy to learn yeah. and fail on their own. But to me, that's my observation of the commonalities between those millennials that get it and those millennials that don't.
And, you know, I also another thing I'm interested in knowing is the role of a coach and family life.
With the coach's family life?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So basically, as you know, I'm Eastern Orthodox. And in the Eastern tradition, there are priests who are married mm-hmm. and priests who are monks or monastics, and they're celibate. There's no like imposed celibacy on the clergy. A person decides
sure.
what they're going to do, and they're both vocations that are taken very serious. Mm-hmm. So as a kind of rule of thumb, kind of general rule of thumb, is that if you want to know the quality of a priest and whether or not that person should be your spiritual father or not, look at his family and his family life. And
yeah.
if he has a strong family life and he has a family that, you know, respects and honors him and so forth, that's the sign that he's a good priest and a good leader of an overall community.
Yeah.
And if that priest's family life is fragmented and there's problems, that does in the community reflect negatively on him as a priest. Do you think it applies to coaches as well?
Absolutely.
So coaches have to have have to be a leader inside the sport and outside the sport in their everyday lives.
If your family life is, well, let's take a step back. You don't have to be a coach. You don't have to be a family man to be a coach.
Yes.
Or woman.
Sure.
So I just want to make that clear. But if you do, then absolutely. How you keep, they're symbiotic. Work life, family life. It's symbiotic. If stuff at in the office or at work is shit, it's really hard, especially as a coach, to not bring some of that home. Mm-hmm. I think that's for any career. I think that's the challenge.
Yeah, definitely.
Is trying to compartmentalize. But if, and conversely, if stuff, home life is rocky, that's going to make your job rocky. Why? Because it's focus. You know, one's going to take focus away from the other. But I think it's very important. Well, it again goes back to values. And I think that family life is very important. And that's one thing that, you know, I made a big effort, especially the last part of the year, is setting down a path for me to get away from the gym more and spend more time with my family.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, you know, one of the biggest learning experiences I had in 2018 was athletes are going to come and go.
Mm-hmm.
Family ain't.
Yeah.
And if the family goes, that's a lot more detrimental than if an athlete goes.
Yeah.
So, family first. And I think this is my opinion, but people should respect that. So, you know, there's some Saturdays I don't come to the gym anymore because that's I stay home with the family.
Yeah.
You know,
that should definitely go without saying.
That should go without saying. People should respect that. If they don't, well, I'm telling you right now, go fuck off.
Yeah. I mean, it would be difficult to imagine somebody having an issue with it, but
yeah,
I guess, you know, it can happen.
Sure. But if someone's going to get all butthurt about that, you know, don't let the door hit your ass on the way out.
Mm-hmm.
Because family is important, especially if you are a parent. You know, I think it's a little, there's a difference. You know, family should always be important. But, you know, there's differences. You know, as a kid, you should have the freedom to do what you want in terms of pursue your own athletic goals. And, you know, my experience too, there have been experiences where family can get in the way of performance.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. So, but that's not to say that family is not important. But it's different when you are a husband and a father versus being a kid.
Yeah.
Or a child, son, daughter.
Yeah. And you know, you were saying how athletes will come and go. And just getting back to the gym business, something I've kind of been realizing lately is that, you know, in commercial gyms, the nature of it is that, you know, people will come and go. Come and go. They'll get that month out of you, and at that point, they don't care if you cancel, because there's a revolving door of people coming in and out. And one would kind of assume that in a specialty gym like this, that specializes in a specific sport, that wouldn't be the case so much, because the people would bring in that kind of mentality, that sport-specific mentality of being here for the long run with a specific purpose.
Yeah.
But the more that I'm kind of, as time goes on, kind of realizing that is not the case. And it kind of seems to me that a gym ultimately, whether it's a commercial or specialty gym, that's always going to be the nature of it. There's people coming
absolutely.
And going.
It's just part of the biz. And, you know, especially with, well, it doesn't matter if you're working with kids or adults, the life happens. Now you see it with kids because, you know, when they get into their season or their sport, you know, they have to put things on pause or stop coming because the priority is the sport. You know, you get a grown adult, and you know, life happens. Travel with work gets chaotic. You know, you name it. There's other priorities. So people are going to come and go, and a lot of times it's, you know, the goal is to. They're going to come and go, and some of those are going to be outside of your control. You know, as mm-hmm. In the private sector, as a gym owner, it's the goal is to minimize or basically limit people leaving for reasons that are in your control.
Yes.
Like quality of service, making sure, you know, you're doing our job, being consistent.
And then there's also the aspect of business in relation to other gyms in the area. And you wrote an article recently about the importance of not undervaluing your gym.
Well, it's
not. It was a very, very good article.
It's one of those real ones.
It was one of my favorite ones, exactly. It was one of my favorite ones. Can you talk about that a little more?
It has less to do about competing with other gyms. It has to do about valuing yourself. So, again, for you listeners that haven't read it, I wrote an article that's on our blog, deltaweightlifting.com. When you undervalue yourself, you undervalue the rest of us.
Thank you.
So basically the premise of that is if you're a good coach and you provide a good value,
yeah.
Don't undercut yourself. Price yourself, charge what you value yourself at. Simple as that. Because you try and undercut the market or give a steal, it's two things that happen. One, you set the barrier, you set the bar much lower for the rest of us.
Yeah.
Because now you make coaching a commodity, mm-hmm. not a service. But also, too, people don't value free. People don't value cheap. It's simple as that. So if you're just trying to get people in the door, if your way of getting people in the door, getting people to buy your service is to just offer it for next to nothing of what you're really worth.
It's convenient for the person to then obtain it, but then once they obtain it, they don't value it.
No, they don't value it. So they're not going to, they're not going to be consistent because, I'm only paying this, mm-hmm. like whatever. And also too is, well, if I better make sure I get my ass in to work with Aaron because I'm fucking paying for it. Because this ain't cheap, and yeah. I'm going to get my money's worth. Well, here's the other thing, and this is where it becomes a slippery slope. You know, more athletes doesn't necessarily mean better, especially if you're a one-man shop and or you know, your personal training or your coach that works at a gym. The more athletes you work with, that means more work. So, you know, if you charge a little bit more and work with less athletes, you're able to provide a better service. So let's say round numbers. Okay, thousand bucks. That you'd be better off working with five people. You'd be able to provide a better yeah. service working with five people versus 10 to 20 people.
Yeah. The quality.
Quality. It's quality over quantity. Because if you're able to provide a higher quality of service to fewer people, in the long run, that's gonna make you more valuable as a coach. Why? Because you're not spread so thin. As a coach, and mm-hmm. this is going back to that first article.
Yeah.
So you want to be a coach. You know, part of the bad is how emotionally, physically, and emotionally draining coaching is. You only have so much to give, and if you're give
yeah.
to so many people, and you're not, the transaction, it's not equal. You know, if you're working with a ton of athletes or members, but you're getting your value paid back to you. Well, that's one thing.
Yeah.
Then that's a conscious decision. But you know, why kill yourself for pennies?
And there may be a little while for a new coach.
Yeah, and look, there's a process
to build that confidence.
Again, kind of going back, like yeah. sometimes, like sometimes you got to pay your dues.
Yeah,
you got to pay the dues. Why? Because yeah. you don't have any experience as a new coach, mm-hmm. so you have to get a proof of concept.
Yes, yeah. and allow something to naturally build.
Right. You have to develop your own brand, and sometimes, yeah, like, well, because you don't have a proof of concept, you can't charge whatever you know. Mm-hmm. Then you have to undercut. But if you've been, you know, been coaching and working with athletes for a while.
But the goal would be to get yourself to that point where then.
Level up as fast as you can. Working with athletes, making connections with other coaches, getting mentored by other coaches. Get to that point as soon as you can, that where you can earn what your true worth is. Because otherwise, you know, the consumer, the athlete, whatever you want to call it, the user won't value not just you, but won't value us.
Yeah.
Won't value the profession.
Yeah, the office of coach.
Right.
Yeah. Because in their minds, there needs to be a distinction between a coach and a personal trainer.
To me, there's a difference between a personal trainer. A coach with a little C
yes.
and a coach with a capital C.
Something. Yeah.
So a personal trainer to me is someone that doesn't work with athletes. Mm-hmm. No, what is an athlete? Someone that competes in something.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you're working with, you know, Gen Pop or you know however you want to say it, Gen Pop normies, you know, then you're going to be, yeah, you can probably consider yourself a personal trainer.
Yeah.
If you're working with, whether it's high school, college, adult, that actually compete in something or are using your services to augment what they're doing, triathlons, marathons, or, you know, traditional stick and ball sports, hey, you're a coach because you're preparing someone for their sport. Theoretically, you should be helping them out on the psychological aspect of things too. To better prepare them for their sport. But then the difference to me between lowercase C coach and capital C coach is maybe professionalism. Not the level of athlete,
mm-hmm.
but your professionalism. How do you hold yourself? You have pride in your work. Are you continually obtaining more knowledge? You know, those that do this as their profession, that are quote unquote professional coaches. Yeah. To me, that's capital C. People are kind of doing this on the side, and you know, I'm doing this just to collect some cash on the side. But you know, this ain't my thing, mm-hmm. my real thing. Now, to me, that's you can still be a coach, but to me, that's lowercase C.
And the lowercase C coach should aspire to be.
You should all. Why not?
Yeah.
Why not? If you haven't, again, said this earlier. If you have the opportunity to be great, be fucking great.
Yeah.
Why be mediocre? That's a loser. That's a goddamn loser mentality. Yeah. If you have the opportunity to be great, be fucking great. Whether you're an athlete or a coach.
But
we always have to start off in lower case.
Exactly. Always see yourself objectively where you are at
yeah.
that moment.
Yes.
Yeah.
Goes back to yet. What you're talking about. You gotta know who you are.
So then what would be then just some final considerations that you would want a potential member or athlete coming or interested in this gym or any other gym? If you can just kind of have that final word.
So this,
so they can get the maximum amount of the maximum.
They can maximize their potential.
Yes, thank you. That's what I was looking for.
Yeah. Longevity. The strength game. It's a long game. You have to play the long game. my advice, if you're walking into a gym thinking this is a short-term thing, you're not going to get results. You're going to be one of those that set those resis every year, every January. Mm-hmm. Strength has got to be, it's a long-term endeavor. It's a journey. So someone comes into here into Delta Weightlifting, what we tell them is, look, the expectation with all our members is that when you come to train with us, you're going to be with us for years. Why? Because that fits within our philosophy and our system of long-term development, long-term athlete development. So it ain't going to happen overnight. It takes time to develop an athlete. It takes time. So that's my advice. That's the kind of leaving piece is you got to look at the long game.
Be in it for the long run.
Be in it for the long run.
It's a lifestyle.
There ain't no fucking shortcuts. There ain't no shortcuts in the strength game. There ain't no shortcuts. And it's hard for people. Today's world, people barely have enough fucking attention to look at a 1 minute long video on Instagram before they fucking swipe up.
Yeah.
So that negatively affects people's approach towards training. Training fitness. Yeah. You lump it all in, whether it's performance based or fitness based. People want it now.
Yeah.
People want to learn how to snatch a clean jerk now. They want PRs now.
Yeah. You'll get it at first.
What's that?
You'll get them at first.
Oh, sure. You get that beginner effect. Yeah. But what's going to happen when that beginner effect wears off? And things really start to get challenging where you actually have to fight. Where you actually have to fight to get progress.
So to change gears a little bit, in one of your, you had a 30-day, like a 30 tips each day.
Yeah.
And one of those, if I'm remembering correctly, was drop the ego, find a mentor.
Uh-huh.
And so people who know you and familiar with your history know that your mentor was Sean Waxman.
Yeah, one of my big ones, yeah.
And I was just kind of interested more about a few things. First of all, like, how exactly did Sean mentor you? What was his methodology? And then what did you get from it?
So when I first started kind of working for him, learning from him, the deal was, you get your CSCS, here's the book. I'm going to read a chapter a week, and I'm going to sit down and talk about each chapter.
So it was hands-on?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So he took the time to really, spend a lot of time.
Okay.
And I had to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
One for free.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's an investment.
The thing is, he told me is, hey, look, I know you're looking to get in. You're asking a lot of questions. You're looking to get into to coaching. I can't pay you. In fact, you have to pay me.
Mm-hmm.
You have to continue paying me a membership. Well, I'll teach you everything I know. It's a deal.
It's an investment, like you said. It's not an expense.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a great opportunity as well.
Yeah. Right. And the deal was anytime each day I was in the gym, whether I was training or observing and then kind of progressing into coaching, was you have to tell me one thing you learned and you have to ask me one question.
Okay.
And if it was a bullshit question, you'd call me out on it.
You would be out there.
Yeah. So I'd come prepared. So what did that mean to me? I had to observe. I had to sit, watch, listen. Not just listen, but observe. I had to read, study on my own, so I could come up with a legitimate question.
Right.
So, taking some accountability, taking some ownership. Because at the end of the day, it was going to be my career.
Mm-hmm.
My career.
And what were the real commonalities that you and him have? Things that you've taken from him to this day.
Honest. Whether the person hearing it likes it or not. But being honest. Now, there's a difference between being honest and being an asshole.
Right.
I like to think I'm honest.
Yeah, tell the truth.
Yeah. The only thing with that is, people can construe that as being an asshole because people don't like hearing the truth sometimes. That's why we have the hashtag fragility is the enemy.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, if you don't like being told the truth, you know, stop being so goddamn fragile.
That's a coach's
job. Take some ownership. You know, someone reads something and gets all butthurt. Well, they're getting butthurt for a reason. Mm-hmm. Because what they're reading or seeing or hearing fucking hits home. What are you going to do about it?
And then as far as like more like things like programming, technique, and so forth, kind of day-to-day in the gym, what are some of those things?
Well, I mean, how we teach the lifts is very similar.
Okay.
You know, when we had the Russians come over, I think it was back to, 2013, and we sat down with them.
Who were they?
That was Ilya Ilyin, Dmitry Klokov, okay. Vasily Polokhnikov, Yasha Khan, who's out in Boston, and then Vasily's coach, Vladimir Sofonov.
Oh, really?
So we sat down with those guys and like, hey, look, you know, how do you teach? How are you taught? And how do you teach the lifts? So we kind of sat down and we came up with, you know, what we call here as our basics, our basics weightlifting progression, our on-ramp now. Sean has something very similar to that, if not the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So how we teach the lifts, our conceptual understanding of the lifts is the same.
And then there's another person that I'm not familiar with, but I looked him up, and he seems to have a lot of really amazing material. Seems like a really interesting person. But that's John Garhammer?
Yes.
Am I saying this?
Dr. Right? Garhammer, yeah.
Correctly?
Yeah.
Like, who is he specifically?
Yeah.
I'm personally just unaware of him.
Yep.
And what was your relationship with him?
So Dr. Garhammer was one of Sean's big mentors and professor. So John ran the John's a biomechanist, and he ran the sports science department at Long Beach State in the 80s through the early 90s.
Okay.
So if you wanted to be a strength coach in the 90s, Long Beach State is where you went.
Okay.
And so John had a program, like the specialty of his program was not just biomechanics, but biomechanics of weightlifting. So, you know, if you look at any primary biomechanical research done on the snatch and clean jerk, that was John. That was Dr. Garhammer.
Interesting. Okay.
And a lot of the research they've done previously, if you look in the references, his research is always referenced.
So a very important source.
Yeah. So he was one of the top, top biomechanists in this hemisphere. He's since retired. And, you know, unfortunately, when the head of those departments retire, so does their program. Sure. So, you know, Long Beach State doesn't have that anymore.
Okay.
And so, you know, I met John while I was training with Sean. John would train with us 3 days a week at like 65, 70 years old.
Wow.
You know, still squatting 400 pounds. Wow. Guy's a beast. So my, you know, I looked at John as a mentor because I was never a formal education from him like what Sean had.
Yeah.
That's what Sean did his graduate studies with Dr. Garhammer, but you know, just talking to him about training, his experiences, and
knowledge,
training together, yeah, and so, having a couple margaritas. It's John's favorite drink.
And so, are you interested in also mentoring and developing coaches yourself?
You tell me.
Yes.
yes. Yeah, I have a great. I have a great passion for that. Why? Because I want to pay it forward because it's, you know, having a mentor like Sean specifically changed, just like why I got into coaching, had the ability to change the direction of someone's life. I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't have Delta Weightlifting.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be the coach that I am if it weren't for Sean's guidance and his willingness to take me under his wing.
Yeah.
To see what I wanted to do, or at least to see my passion, and then to be able to want to be a part in that development.
The reason is very personal.
yeah, again, it goes back to my purpose. Why I got into coaching? Because to me, I look at who are the people that have made the most impact in my life. It's always been coaches, mostly.
And is there a need for it? You know, in your article, you have the line, you know, we don't need more coaches, we need better coaches.
Better coaches.
So do you see that the sport of weightlifting or strength and conditioning, do you see a need to have better coaches?
Absolutely.
As opposed to just more athletes?
Well, because we're getting more athletes in,
yeah,
we need better coaches. It's for the benefit of the athletes. It's sort of saying, like, you know, so I talked about this in the level ones. At the end, I finish up every level one with my, you know, responsibility of a coach speech. A kid or an athlete comes to you, they're putting your trust in you that you know what the fuck you're doing. And if you don't, or if you're guessing, you're throwing those prime years of that athlete's athletic career right down the fucking toilet.
It was very eye-opening when I heard that. I mean, it's you know it, but when you sit and really face it,
yeah,
understand the implications of it,
again,
it was very, very heavy.
As a coach, it's important, and that's why I look at one of my roles. I look at my role as a coach, whether I'm coaching athletes or I'm coaching coaches, to give the hard truths. Put it in a manner that it fucking hits you hard, because the responsibility of a coach is huge. You know, an athlete has a very short amount of time to capitalize on their athletic abilities. And if you're not doing your job as a coach, and if you're guessing and you're not continually seeking knowledge and trying to prove your craft, they can't get those years back.
Time is precious.
Time is fucking precious.
It's a Socratic saying of, you know, it's later than you think.
Yeah. You know, one of the hard truths to talk about with athletes. Each lift you take is one lift closer to your retirement. So
you only have so many.
You only have so many. And if that lift today in training was your last lift, would you be satisfied with your career?
Well, that's basically, I think, everything, all the questions that I had.
Cool. And there you have it, folks. Part two of the interview, done, in the books, in the can. Big thanks to Aaron for sitting down and taking the time to interview me and asking some good thought-provoking questions. And for you listeners, if you liked what you listened to, as always, guys, please share, rate, and comment, review the episode on iTunes. And make sure to follow us on Instagram at @Delta_weightlifting. That's it from us this time, guys. Much appreciated. Peace.